Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear. I'm Susan Laris and Dance, and tonight we hope to have a rather relaxed discussion of a diversity of topics related to different spiritual viewpoints and our spiritual journeys. Tonight my guest is actually my significant other, Brian Ressler. He has joined us tonight to discuss some perspectives from what some would call a New Age perspective, but to begin with, we realize that labels are very limiting and have a lot of connotations which may or may not hold. So that is the term that I chose to describe this belief system, but it really isn't a system at all. So we're just using that term loosely tonight. There is a chat room open tonight, and we welcome your comments in the chat. In fact, this is the kind of show where we'd love to get a discussion going. If we don't get too many people in the chat or calling in, we will just keep going as long as it makes sense. And our intent here is a lot of times Brian and I have discussions from unique perspectives. I come from an evangelical past, and so I ask a lot of questions that come out of that background, whereas Brian comes from a different past altogether. If you do want to call in to tonight's show, the guest call-in number is 310-807-5104. And we will be taking callers during the show should anyone want to talk with us. So let me bring Brian on the line and say, hello, Brian. Nice to have you on the show.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for finally having me on one of your shows. You had so many guests, I never get to be on the show.
Brian's actually been quite active in the spiritual community for quite a while, sort of in the background online. And why don't you characterize, Brian, how what your spiritual journey has been like and what your involvement in what some would call the New Age community would be, or you label it however you choose or with no label.
Oh, gee, labels. Well, for most people, New Age is pretty close, but then I don't subscribe to a lot of tenets of people who call themselves New Age. So since we are in disagreement, I don't know if I can call myself a New Ager or not. I just call myself me. I know what I'm not, but it's really hard to say what I am. My background goes way back to when I was very young. I was what I would call spiritually active in my teens. And then at a point in my life, I kind of went to sleep, and I spent 20-some years of my life pretty much asleep. I like to think of it as hibernating. I was aware of what was going on, but I just allowed it to occur. And then about 7 years ago, I had a fairly traumatic spiritual emergence, a sort of, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I threw a challenge to the universe. And when I say universe, some people may say God, some people may say source. Let's call it a higher power. I said, heal me or take me. I'm done. And I'm still here, so obviously I was healed. And I've been on the go ever since.
Now, I know that I wanted to read something from a book that was a part of both of our awakenings, I think, although we don't really subscribe to any particular book. And I was wondering if you could reflect upon this from your perspective. It's just a very brief quote from a book called Remember by Steve Rother. And it says, it's the intro, if you could see yourselves for even a brief moment from our perspective, you would remember home and your true heritage. Perhaps then you would treat yourselves and each other as the masters you truly are. I think coming from the evangelical perspective that I do, one of the biggest challenges is embracing just how worthy we are. Whereas if you don't have that evangelical background, it's a little bit easier to embrace this sense of mastery being available to us. And, you know, I can certainly conceptualize this, and probably when we've talked off the radio show, that's certainly something that is a challenge for me at times, and I know is a challenge for a lot of people, coming out of a perspective where you actually have to prove yourself totally unworthy, and you know there's no it's a completely different relationship that's described with God. So I was wondering if you could reflect upon that a little bit and what that means to you from your perspective.
That's what I used to post, and I call the I'm not worthy syndrome. I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy. From my perspective, if you're here on earth, you're worthy. A lot of people, and I've come to find this over the last few years, feel that they're here on earth and whether they had no choice, no say, you know, this is where God put them, this is where they created, this is all there is, they feel this is an impediment, this is something to be gotten through, that they're here on earth, and if they can just get through this life and not mess up, if they can just get through this life and not have a pitfall, then when it's done, they'll be rewarded. And I'm more of the perspective that the reward is that you're here. What if I told you that to come to earth, to be here on earth, you have to raise your hand and say, I volunteer, I want to go. I want to be on earth. That implies a great many things. First of all, it implies that you exist before you came. It implies that you're a conscious being of some type before you came here. And then after you're here, you're going somewhere as well. Maybe you're even going back to where you were before you came here. So my whole perspective of being here on earth is different, because I don't look at it as I'm trying to get out of here, I'm trying to get to that eternal reward, I'm trying to get to heaven. What if being here is my reward? This is something that I asked to do, or something that I trained to do, something that I've wanted to do, and now I'm here. So from that perspective, in the back there's a little bit of knowing that we are not what we appear to be. And this is where that quote you gave from Remember talks about, if you could see yourself as you truly are. And sometimes you're looked into the eyes of an infant, and you just get overwhelmed and you well up in tears and you feel that, what most people are reluctant to feel, what I like to call the love of God. You're just overwhelmed and the tears well up. And that's recognizing another being for who they really are, or recognizing yourself for who you really are. And that's really what I think that quote is talking about.
I think you hit upon something really important that a lot of people don't think about, is that it's that question of, did we exist before we were here? And also the question of life being something that is in preparation for a final destination. Now, I have come to embrace many what some would call New Age beliefs, and I would say that to me, it's a wonderful thing and a very meaningful thing to believe that this journey that we're on is one of growth that continues. It not only started before I was here, and I firmly believe in reincarnation. And we might touch upon that a little bit tonight as to explorations of reincarnation and why we believe in that. And I believe that, and I know Brian has talked about the fact that you're not confined to this planet either. It's a very big universe, and that you can have different incarnations in different places. But I think it has to do with what is so compelling about this belief system for me is it's not so simplistic as to think that there's this one short life on Earth. You were not here before that. And after that, you just go to this final destination, and there really isn't a sense that there will be a lot of growth after that. That's your final reward. And I know that Christians talk about that, well, there'll be things they have to do. You know, they'll be doing things in service to God and stuff. But they really don't explore that as to what that means. And what would it mean not to have any challenges, for example, if you're in heaven, as they would say it, as a final destination, and there are no real challenges, what would that really mean for existence? So that's kind of what some of the things you've reflected upon mean to me within the perspective of where I came from spiritually. And I will tell you, just to let the audience know who may be new to this show, my background was such that I was raised in a very conservative evangelical home. And I struggled with some of the beliefs that I was being taught, even though my home was a loving home. It was a well-functioning home. It's just that there were things being taught in the church that I found very difficult to accept, especially as I got into my teens. I would read the Bible and I would find these verses that were very violent, and that really upset me even as a teen. And then around my mid-teens, the New Age movement was becoming popular. This was in the late 70s, early 80s. And I started to hear some of those concepts, and they actually did make some sense to me, and they were very compelling. However, I was terrified of them because of what I'd been taught as a child about false love and false doctrine and things that sound good or too good to be true. And I guess this struggle for me was so intense through my early 20s, this battle between what to believe, because I couldn't really embrace this notion of an angry God that would send anyone to hell. And yet I was terrified of New Age beliefs, which I thought might be demonic. And so the result was I shut down completely for several years. I had almost no spiritual life whatsoever for several years, until I had a crisis many years later, which very briefly brought me face to face with my own mortality. And then I realized I had not resolved this question of belief. And having been brought up an evangelical, that's a really important question to resolve, because if you don't do it correctly, you may be going to hell, which is about the most horrifying thing imaginable. And so I had to deal with that. And in my case, my question, you had a statement to the universe that you said, Brian, but for me it was the question, show me the way. I couldn't have been more sincere, in tears, asking to God, whoever the creator, whoever was in control, whoever was the creator of the universe, show me the way. And I believed there was something out there. I wasn't an atheist. And so what happened to me after that was pretty dramatic. There were a lot of synchronicities that started to happen. Synchronicities are coincidences, which are really unusual. And people started showing up in my life just to explain things to me. In fact, this book that I just read showed up very quickly after that, where a friend just showed up in my life who had been an acquaintance and who started to explain some of these things to me. I had never heard the concept. It was stunning to me that we were actually higher beings coming down to the earth to have a human experience, as opposed to the other way around, lower beings rising up or lower beings being saved. And so that was a really big deal to me. In fact, it was so meaningful when I first heard about it. It was like, Eureka, I found it. But unfortunately, that wasn't the end for me, because As things started to progress, and I had these coincidences happening, and things were happening that were pretty amazing in ways, and I fell into a complete spiral of fear again. Because I still had people in my life who, of course, were very concerned that I was falling into New Age beliefs, which they viewed as harmful. I even had some friends at the time who wanted to burn this very book that I just read from, actually. Believe it or not, I was living in a very conservative place, and these were loving, well-meaning friends, very conservative friends. They felt that this was harmful, and I went through a really difficult time of fear, and it took me a long time to sort through all of that to get to where I am today. It took many years, and I can only say that it's through trusting in our Creator and trusting in the love of our Creator that got me there, because for me, there was no going back to a God that would allow hell to exist. In fact, I didn't have a book like Rob Bell wrote. Rob Bell has written this very popular book called Love Wins, where he describes why he can't embrace the concept of an eternal hell. I didn't have the benefit of something like that, and it took me a long time to sort all that out. And so that doesn't mean I don't still have questions. In fact, I often call myself a New Ager with questions, but I'm a New Ager in the sense that I believe a new age is dawning on this planet. And I'm going to bring you back into this, Brian, so that you can talk about your perspective on this idea. If you bring it down to the fundamental definition of the term New Age, what do these terms mean to you? Quantum leap, expansion in consciousness, guided evolution. These are all concepts that are very popular in what some would call the New Age movement today. And I'm happy to talk some more about what they mean to me, but I want to bring you in and talk about that a little bit from your perspective.
Well, people call it the New Age, and I have to chuckle on that because some of the concepts being expounded upon now are 1,800 years old, and they're in the Gnostic Gospels that aren't included in the Bible. They were of the same time frame, the same leanings. Actually, there's parts of the Bible that are totally New Age. If you know where to go and look, interleaved among different sections, there's stuff that can be taken out. And if you basically say this exact same thing, but don't reference it to where it was taken from, people wouldn't know you're actually quoting the Bible. You're dancing around something there, and I want to bring something up that you talk about the Christians and their experiences and hell there. Something that I've discovered in my awakening, because I remember, and you talked about past lives, I remember my past lives. Some of them are quite clear. And I also remember the time in between lives, some of them. So from that perspective, with those experiences, pretty much everything that the Bible teaches Christians, Muslims and Jews gets thrown out the window for me, because with reincarnation, everything they're telling me doesn't hold water. It doesn't stand up. If we come back, and from my experience, it's because we choose to come back. If we choose to come back, then that whole punishment of hell hangs out there, and I have to ask the question, well, where did this come from, and why are people pushing it? I've had such difficulty with that. I don't get the concept of hell. I know where it comes from historically. I'm a big history fan. Read a lot of history. I go back and look at the history of hell as far as from the Greeks and the Romans, and I see how that got transformed into the Christian version of hell. And even what's in the Bible doesn't seem to match what people tell me. And I kind of chuckle on this or that, because that is always what gets thrown back at me, is I'm going to hell, I'm going to burn in hell. I have to laugh. It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened in quite a number of lives. So I'm unconcerned about it happening suddenly in a future life. So we get away from that a little bit, and we start saying, well, okay, as quote a New Ager, I have no fear of hell. well, what then do I fear? Because this is another question that gets asked. And basically, I look at them and tell them nothing. If you understand who you truly are, what you truly are, why you're here on Earth, then you don't really have fears. You have cautions. A caution would be that you don't run across six lanes of traffic at rush hour to help a stranded motorist. That's a cautious thing to do. Some people might say they fear crossing traffic, but it's more of a cautious thing. True fear, if you understand just where you come from and where you're going, true fear tends to become something to be overcome or something that's nudging you in a direction that you really want to go. And, of course, if you have things nudging you in directions you really want to go or places that you really want to be, that may show you that somebody's actually trying to help you or somebody's trying to look out for you and that we have higher powers that are willing to assist us. This is where the synchronicities come in. You mentioned synchronicities before. You know, the right thing at the right time is just what you need. You know, I've had things occur that at the time I was upset and angry about because they caused me to miss something, they caused me to be late, they caused something to happen. But because I was late going to somewhere, something else happened, which was exactly what I needed. And it was such an odd coincidence. And it's one of those things that when you step back and look at them and you start adding them all up, you think, wow, this is just either a totally statistically improbable things happen all the time, or there's a sign that there are higher powers working to assist you. And you said earlier that the New Age movement, some people believe we are higher beings having a human experience as opposed to lower beings trying to have a higher experience. If we have higher beings assisting us in our lives, throwing little coincidences out there to help us or assist us, and we are actually higher beings having a human experience, then who's really helping us? That's the question sometimes you have to look at, is are we helping ourselves really and not knowing it? Who are we really on this planet? And are we just on this planet, or are there others like us out there? I find it all fascinating sometimes when I sit down and really ponder on it. From a larger perspective of who we really are and all the potential out there versus some of the more narrow views of oh, we're just this or oh, we're just that and we have to do this, and this, or this is going to happen and here's your reward and like it because that's all the only choice you have. You have no choice in the matter. I find a lot of those views very narrow and very restrictive, and really from a more pessimistic point of view, if you've ever studied the history of religions and organized religions in particular, a lot of those religions, historically, you had countries. Countries came and went, but the religions stayed behind. And the church was very powerful throughout history, particularly in Europe. So if you look at that perspective, did the power of the church ever go away? And what is it really there for? Is the church there for spiritual enlightenment, or is the church here to tell you what to do? Or is a church there just to offer solace? I think all of those things. Do miracles happen in churches? Yes. Do people feel the love of God in a church? Yes. Do people get healed in a church? Yes. Can the church be abusive? Just look at the news. Can the church have somebody in it who has a goal, you know, tithing, money, power? Yes. So a little discernment is required there when we talk about religion versus spirituality. A little discernment is needed to say, well, is this really something I feel God would do? Or is this something that this person is doing because they want me to be afraid and tithe and do as I'm told? And it's a slightly cynical view, but not being raised as a Christian, I'm just looking at what I've seen when I've attended churches. I'm looking at what people tell me. I'm looking at what the local people come out and tell me. Is everyone like that? No. There are some people that are good souls and lead a great life, and they're happy with what religion gives them, and that's great. But there are other people who are not happy, who are in doubt, and when they stand up and they get vocal with me, because sometimes I have some very loud discussions on the subject, I always ask them, well, who are you trying to convince? Are you trying to convince you or are you trying to convince me? And from my perspective, this is where I have trouble sometimes. I don't understand what they're saying. I'll give you a great example. From my perspective, once I was in a conversation with somebody, and they called me an angel of light, and I took that to mean an angel, a divine angel of light, and I thanked them for it. I thought that was a compliment. And then you told me what it really meant. And I was flabbergasted that what I take as a compliment can be a grave criticism by somebody else. And then I stepped back and realized that a lot of words we take for granted have totally different meanings. When we talk about, let's say, God, and we say, well, God is this, God is that, my perspective of God is so completely different from most organized religions that I don't use the word. I really try to not use the word. I use the word source or the word the universe to come back and stay away from that angry, wrathful, white, tall man with a beard sitting on a throne kind of thing, because that's not my perspective of God. Along the same lines, when we talk about anything within spirituality or religion, it is often misunderstood. In when we say, well, this, we talk about God, we talk about fear, we talk about evil, all these things that everybody has a very well-defined view on, but everybody has a different perspective and different view on, I think is one of the reasons we have some of the problems we do in the world. We never sit down and define our terms. We always assume that when I say this, it means the same thing for everybody. And I really think this is where a lot of misunderstanding comes from, and it's something we really need to work on.
Well, the angel of light thing is particularly difficult to understand if you don't come from that perspective. And, you know, if you'd never heard the verse that Satan appears as an angel of light, and that person who was criticizing you, which I believe was on an online kind of forum where we both used to participate quite a bit, we've done a lot of writing online. That person was trying to say that what you were saying was too good to be true and that it was deception. And, you know, you talk about discernment, Brian, but from the Christian standpoint, you're actually told not to lean on your own understanding. And what that means to a lot of people is that you can't trust your own mind and that you need to do what you're told, that you have a source book, which is the Bible, and you are to study that. However, it gets complex because you start to read it. I mean, this was my experience, and it starts to contradict itself, or it has things in there that are really disconcerting, violent things. It has some very loving things, too, but they don't seem to reconcile. So then you're told, well, you need someone to help you interpret the context. And so you're essentially leaning on their understanding, which is kind of interesting because I've often wondered, well, what makes their understanding any more valid than mine? Just, you know, maybe they went to Bible college for years and years. But what did they learn there? And also, when you put written words of men above even your own conscience, your own sense of what feels right, that can result in a lot of not so good behavior. And I really think that some of the bad things that are not consistent with the love in the Bible that have happened through history are because people have taken advantage of that. In fact, in much of that history, people couldn't even read. So they were being told what was in there, and fear was certainly a big aspect of that. Now, in these modern times, for me on my journey, I was terrified. I mean, I have to say that I can't think, maybe in a fleeting instant here and there, I thought maybe I got it. I mean, I'm a person who, you know, when I went through this anguish period, it must have been, I don't know, I guess now it's less than 10 years ago, but getting closer to that long ago. I mean, I literally repented on my knees with my Christian friends who were trying to free me from New Age influences at the time. And I was very sincere, and I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified that even though these things sounded good, that didn't mean they couldn't be coming from a deceptive supernatural source that I couldn't respond to. And I would pray, and I went to Bible study and asked questions. I was in such anguish. At one point, I remember, I hadn't been in Bible study all that long, but I asked so many thoughtful questions, and I think they needed a temporary leader, and they wanted me to lead the Bible study one week. And I said, and this was at a conservative church, and I said, now wait a sec. I said, how am I supposed to lead the Bible study? I've got too much doubt. I mean, these would be people that I would literally cry with people sometimes over just how much anguish, doubt I had, not about the New Age so much. I mean, I was told I had to get rid of it, that it was an evil, but over reading the Bible, total, complete anguish over reading what I read in the Bible. And these were violent verses that I could not reconcile. And the concept of hell and the concept that Satan seemed to win, that even if one soul was lost, and, you know, it was so intensely personal for me because it would have been my soul, that someone who so sincerely sought the truth from the Creator, no deceiver in the mix, you know, whoever the Creator was, stand up, could be deceived into eternal punishment and torment and even torture, depending on which version of hell that you believe in. People would say, well, hell is just eternal separation. Well, I didn't want to be separated from God. I wanted God. And people would say, well, you want the version of God you want and not the version in the Bible. Well, the version in the Bible was contradicting itself and didn't make sense. And so anyway, I found out I'm not the only one with this anguished doubt. In fact, that's why Rob Bell's book, and he's not even really a New Ager, although he expresses some interesting concept that shares New Age ideas without maybe even realizing it. He's expressed that, Carlton Pearson, yet another minister who had anguished doubt about hell. I mean, I think there's tons of doubt out there, and I think people are afraid to say anything about it, and it's a total burden. I mean, when I had a crisis in my life, I had no spiritual anchor at all because I was in such anguish, doubt. And so, and it shouldn't have been that way because I was a seeker. I may have shut myself down because I couldn't reconcile this, even with prayer, earlier in my life. But when I had a crisis and I wanted to get it right, God is supposed to listen to us, and that's how I finally began to realize that God is so much bigger than what I'd been taught. And we do have a comment from the chat room. I want to involve people in the chat. And in fact, we have a comment from Brian, too, because I'm talking so much I haven't let him get a word in edgewise. but that's okay. We'll get him talking in here again in a second. But I want to mention the chat room. Someone is saying, fear drove me away from the things that I learned about God, just as fear drove me toward the things that I have learned about God. And the same person, yes, I actually believed that we lived here on earth and that I couldn't possibly end up anywhere else but hell for eternity. During crisis periods in my life, and again, I'm just relating what someone's saying in the chat because I really want to involve the people in the chat as long as they don't mind. I won't mention you by name or anything. During crisis periods in my life, I felt more alone than ever. Yes, I believe that we just step out of our bodies and we are on the other side, whatever the other side means to me. So I'm going to let Brian now pick this up because he's actually talking to this person in the chat, and I think other people are probably thinking similar things. So, Brian, why don't you express what you're stating in the chat openly on the program?
Well, the question in the chat is about fear, and fear is probably the most common motivator among people. If fear drives a lot of things. Fear is why we go to war. Fear is why we take advantage of people. Fear is why we steal things from other countries or invade other countries. Fear causes a lot of things to occur. So fear is there. It's real. Took me a long time in this life to overcome fears, certain fears. And the process was important. This brings me around to I'm actually taking notes while Susan talks as something comes to mind. And it's related to fear. Overcoming fear is a journey. If you overcome a fear, you've achieved something. You have, moved to a different perspective to overcome a fear. And in that different perspective, you now see things differently, which that's a little redundant. But you can see things that you couldn't see before, or you can see that what you were afraid of wasn't really something you had to be afraid of. That's not saying the fear isn't real. Just ask any 4-year-old who's seen something scary or there's a thunderstorm. The fear is quite real, but that doesn't mean that the fear can overwhelm them, but it doesn't mean the fear can actually hurt them. I want to loop around a little bit to the idea of answers. It used to be a running joke, and I used to post a lot in forums. I don't post nearly as much as I used to. People would ask spiritual or religious questions, and they pop in a forum and they ask a question, and a Bible question would be very typical, and somebody would give them an answer, and then they would ask that question again, and somebody would give them another answer, and they'd ask the question over and over and over, and they usually got the same answer, but they kept asking the question. So I came to realize that the answers sometimes don't matter. If you had one question, you could ask God, what would that question be? And if you got an answer, would the answer matter? Because you've asked the question and you've gotten an answer, but a lot of people don't believe the answer, or they're not sure of the answer, or they're not sure they asked the right question. So if the answers don't matter, and the questions you're unsure about, is it more that you got an answer or more that you worked through the issue and came up with an answer on your own? And this goes back to my personal experience. There's a lot of things that I worked through in my life or ideas I came up with or things that I opinions that I came to. And later on, I would ask somebody the question on that, and their answer matched what I'd come to. So I got more of a, not an answer so much as confirmations. So as we're working through issues, are we looking for answers? Are we looking for confirmations in things? If you've come to a conclusion and you get confirmations on that conclusion, is that more reassuring than asking a question and getting an answer that you doubt the answer to? Or you doubt the question, or you're not sure if it's the right question. So when we roll this back into fear, we're afraid of something, we're working through the fear, do we say, well, how do I overcome this fear? Do you need to overcome the fear, or do you need to step back and look at what you're afraid of, look at the position you're in and say, this is a valid fear, this is not a valid fear. Let me stop trying to ask the same question and get a different answer. Let me step back and go, well, wait a minute. Let me throw everything out and start over. I'm having a problem. I have this particular issue. I keep looking at it. I can't get an answer. If I'm asking the wrong questions and I'm getting the wrong answers, then maybe I don't even need to deal with it. I just need to walk away from it and look at something else. A lot of problems can go away that way. A lot of problems, you ask the... As a friend of mine said once in a seminar, he asked the question, is the letter B male or female? And everybody looked at him and didn't get it. Well, it's not either one, but you only have a choice of male or female. You can't say neither. It's an A or B question sort of thing. So if the answer has no meaning because the question has no meaning, is the problem valid? Are you working on something that's meaningless? Can you step away from the whole thing and say, well, this is just an old problem that's been dealt with, or something I don't need to deal with, or something that's not mine? Can a lot of our issues, if we just let them go, are they no longer issues? This is how I've dealt with a lot of fears. I just let them go, and they were no longer fears. They weren't real to me anymore, and they just disappeared. And that was one way to solve it.
I think, I wish I could say exactly what the process was for me to start freeing myself from fear. And I'm not totally free from fear now, as you know, but it's certainly a lot better than it used to be. And for me, I feel that it really has been a process of healing. I think if there's any evidence in my life of a creator's intervention, whether, you know, I view that creator as, for me, it's easier. I know a lot of New Agers say, you know, the creator is you. And I think when you come from the evangelical background, that is a challenging statement to make, even though I can embrace that in the sense of the creator is omnipresent, and that includes me. Because I always feel that it's bigger than me, too. It's not just me. It's not just me. I mean, I guess at the highest level, if we're one with the Creator, that's what it means. But I think that's probably a big misunderstanding, not to digress too much. But sometimes I think that really puts off Christians, conservative Christians, who hear New Age type people talk about saying, you know, I am God. I mean, that sounds incredibly prideful to say something like that. And the way they're looking at it is as this external, powerful God, the way that they view God, when what that person is really saying, it's the equivalent of a Christian saying, God is omnipresent, including in me. It's the equivalent of a Christian saying, Jesus is in my heart, even though they would say that that would only be among Christians. It's the same idea. And so I think that's something it took me a while to get, that it really is kind of getting at a concept that's already resident within the tradition that I knew. And I'm finding that more and more. I don't know if we'll have time to talk about the end times tonight. We may have time to talk about any number of things. I'm really glad that we're getting some people in the chat, and, you know, we may continue these discussions in the future, because I think it's valuable for us to talk about these kinds of things. You know, even with the end times, it's fascinating from my perspective, having come from an evangelical mindset, to see some of the same things expressed within what some would call the New Age community. There's just such a commonality, and I know that in itself people would view as New Age, to try to see the same thing in different places. And you know, my Christian friends would say, well, one is real and one's counterfeit. I mean, I've often heard that. But to me, I do believe that it's God. I believe that it's God reaching out to all of us in the way that will allow us to have that relationship with God. And there's a question. Let's launch into this. Often, conservative Christians will say that New Agers cannot have a personal relationship with God, and that God is just an impersonal energy force, and that you don't have a personal, or you really don't experience the love in a similar way. Now, for me, because I was so caught in fear and so caught in doubt about the violent aspects of God, I quite honestly didn't experience that love within Christianity, and it was really hard for me, especially as a teenager. I'd go to youth group, and other people would seem to be experiencing it, and I wasn't. And I even wrote letters that I never sent to things like Campus Crusade about my anguish over that, as to what was I not doing right that I couldn't feel the love. But in any case, back to the question that I think will maybe help to clear up something that often people ask, do people like you, Brian, you are not a Christian, in a conservative sense, do you have a relationship? Do you have what could be called a personal relationship with God, the Creator, Source, however you want to call it? And what does love have to do with it?
Do I have a personal relationship with God? Yes. In the true sense, do I feel the love of God? Yes. Do I sit there sometimes with tears running down my face, feeling the love of God wrapped around me? Yes. Do I do this without the personal relationship with Jesus Christ? Yes. So that begs the question then, if I can do this, is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ required or just an option? In my opinion, it's one way to go among many. Others would say, well, no, that's the only way, and therefore what I'm feeling is false. Which brings up the question, if what I'm feeling is false love, then there's no way to tell false love from true love. And if you can't tell false love from true love, then you can't tell anything, and there's no point in continuing because you can't tell what's going on. And I won't go into the details as people describe it to me for that that version of Christianity. I kind of chuckle sometimes because basically you can't win. You can't tell what's going on. You can't tell anything. It's just, it depends on who's speaking, on which side they take of the issues. So, yes, you can feel the divine. It can be so overwhelming at times. I can't move. I just sit there, and it's just mind-boggling, overwhelming. I've gotten better at it. I have found that it shows up when you need it. Sometimes I can call it. Sometimes I can't. It just depends on my state of mind. The better my state of mind, the easier it is to feel it. When I'm moody or I'm disgruntled or out of balance, as it happens from time to time, then I have less luck with it. It's not to say evidence of the divine is not there. Things occur that would require statistically divine intervention to occur, and then I smile because I think it's just the divine showing itself in other ways. But that feeling, I can't describe it. I'm sure people have felt it. I'm sure people have gone to church and felt the love of God, and having felt it once, you want it again and again. It's very addictive. But at the same time, when you're in, I'm choosing my words carefully. I'm trying not to use words that can be misconstrued. When you're in that moment of feeling it, there are some things have less meaning. You're like, well, you know, if this is what it's like to feel the love of God all the time, hey, let's go to heaven and feel it all the time. Some people just always try to regain it, try and do whatever they can to get back into that state of being. And I think it's possible to live in that state of being all the time. It's very possible to hit that state, or what I like to call bungee jump, in and out of that state as needed, and live your life and have that connection all the time.
Well, you know, it is actually, there's a verse that I read earlier this week on my Easter show about what the Bible says about the new earth that is dawning, when there's a new heaven and a new earth. And one of the things that come to mind as you're talking is this feeling of God being with us, God being among us and very clearly among us, such that, you know, you will be in that state of being fully conscious of the full scope of the Creator's presence with you. And to me, that crosses the boundaries between Christian, New Age, different belief systems. I was reading a book today by John Hoag. I should have it up here. I don't have it with me in the room. It's about messiahs, and it's about different cultures looking for a messiah and how they think about a messiah, whether it be in Islam or Hinduism or Buddhism, different belief systems. And it's amazing some of the commonalities that people have in terms of what they believe, and also this belief that, you know, peace on earth is possible, that there will be this time of peace and that it'll be ushered in by God and however you perceive God, and this notion of what you talk about where you will have that full presence. I think if we were fully present in that love that you describe all the time, it'd be really hard to function in the world as the world is now. I don't know about what the world's going to be like then. I think it'll be a lot different, actually. But it's almost something you have to get used to. I will say that when I first started to see the little synchronicities and miracles and things, I was astonished by that, and I was frightened by it. It was really pretty scary to me because I didn't know where it was coming from, because I believe there were multiple sources of such things back then. And, you know, now I've steered away from those beliefs. I've come to trust more. It really does take a lot of trust to be discerning and to trust your creator that, no, you know, you're not going to be steered astray. That takes a great deal of trust. So anyway, I did want to mention to anyone listening that we do take calls to this show. If anyone wants to talk about their own experiences or reflect upon what we're talking about or ask questions of either of us, the call-in number is 310-807-5104. And also, if you're there, we do have an active chat. In order to ask questions in the chat, you have to have an ID, but it's really pretty easy to get in Blog Talk Radio, just the listener ID, and then you can actually participate in there. So I have a question for, well, actually, I'm going to let Brian talk a little bit about what's going on in the chat now, about this concept of, he just wrote in the chat, that we are many things, including God. We are also I and also we and also us. Talk about this concept of we. That, I think sometimes that gets kind of lost within, when you're coming from the Christian framework like I did, that concept of we being God, which I'm starting to get a feel for now. But Brian, why don't you reflect upon that a little bit more outside just the chat room? I think that would be helpful.
Well, back, can't remember how long ago, during my emergence, I had some interesting experiences, and I still have them, but I've acclimated and dealt with it in a way that works for me. And I had experiences where, you know, we all know what it's like to be I. You know, that's pretty normal for most people. They have the I experience. I had a lot of what I call we experiences, where there was I, but there was also a group, what I want to call, I have to word this carefully, let's call it a group mind sensation, where there was me and there were some others in there, and it wasn't a conversation so much as a union where it was us, or we. And at first, it took a lot of work. Basically, with a lot of deep meditation, I could get to that state. And I had a lot of trouble with syntax in that state. So how do you go from being I to being we? Some of the pronouns and things change. And I had to work through just what the we was. And there were different we's. You could think of it as being on the football team and also on a swimming team, being on several different sports at once. You could be a member of several different groups. And I won't go into the details of what the groups are, but it was interesting to learn to deal with being a part of a group and a self at the same time. And later on, I found that it helped me prep for dealing with the concept of being part of all that is. And you hear the expression a lot that we are one, we're all one, and we're all God. Yes, that's true, but we're also self, and we're also part of other groups. So there's a lot of membership cards on the wallet, as it were. And it took a lot of effort on my part to keep that all in the right perspective of just who, what am I really? And we're all the same. I mean, we're all members of different groups. We all are pretty much, you know, the same way. And I have found that some people, you know, some people might call it channeling sometimes when they're in that we mode and they're bringing information through. And and they get haughty with it, but I have to joke, everybody does it, they just don't always realize it. So I got comfortable with, you know, I'm just me, and sometimes me is a little bigger or a little smaller or has a slightly different perspective than the me was a few minutes ago. And I used to be very distinct about it, and over time I just ignore it. It's just me. Whatever way me is looking, that's the way I am at the moment. And it seems to work for me. Some people like to keep them separate. They have the I and they have the we, and they're very distinctive when the we is there. And they speak differently, they write differently, they talk differently. And for them, that helps them know what's we and what's I. And if that works for them, that's fine. Now, if you take that to the next step, you talk about the divine, saying we are all divine. Do we differentiate when we're being divine? Or are we always divine and we just pretend to notice at certain times? And I think that's really, really the perspective I work from, is we are always part of the divine. We're always connected. We just tend to ignore it, except at certain moments when we stand back and say, look, see, there it is. But it's always been there. And then we go back to what we were doing and pretend not to see it again.
I have to say that I'm letting you talk to the audience. I'm actually interacting. I was actually tweeting about our show a little bit just to get people out there. So I didn't hear everything you said. It's classic. I didn't hear everything you said. That's familiar, isn't it? Sometimes we have conversations and I don't always listen to everything Brian says, and sometimes we have to come to our own answers. Just for those of you who've wandered in late, Brian is actually my significant other. So we are a couple and we are having this conversation live. We come from different perspectives and we realized that we have a lot of conversations like this just, you know, between the two of us. And it would be really helpful to have them on the show. And, you know, we may do this again, because I think this is really helpful to do this. Since I missed some of what you said, Brian, I have another question. We're talking about meditation a little bit in the chat room, and, you know, that's something I've never really figured out. I mean, I don't know that I'm trying that hard. I find that if I go for a walk to the park, that's really helpful, and it seems that's been helpful for years for me. And I think maybe people get a little bit too obsessed about how to meditate. We did have a friend of both of us, Christine, was on the show several shows ago, and she's a meditation teacher. And one of the things she said is, you know, don't worry about doing it wrong. Just find a still moment, you know, find what works for you. But what do you have to say, Brian, about meditation and stillness and what that can do for people and how to do it?
Well, you don't really want me to talk about your meditation practices, do you?
Yeah, don't talk about my meditation. That's like talking about nothing.
Meditation. I think meditation is a journey. From my personal perspective, when I really got back into meditation, when I was 15, I could meditate to the point where I saw auras and saw energy patterns and out of body and all that. And that went away for a long time because it had to, or I wouldn't be where I'm at if I didn't make that go away. So I had experience early with it. When I reemerged, I would spend a lot of time meditating. I'd listen to mantras or get the incense out or get the music out. And I would push myself into a meditative state, and I'd get to a certain point and I'd like it. And, you know, I'd hold it for a while, and then, I used to joke, I'd go splat. Phone would ring, dog had to go out something, and you have to get up. And, of course, now that you're not meditating, you let the state go. And over about a year, I got to the point where you can reach a meditative state pretty much anywhere. You can do it at work. You can do it in the grocery. You can do it for a walk. You can reach an elevated state, and you can hold it and do it pretty much all the time. And you can tell that you're in an elevated state, and it becomes normal. So essentially, over time with meditation, you can raise that state and keep it. You'll notice at times when you lose it. If you have, you know, something occur, you bringing groceries in from the car and the bag rips and the eggs hit the driveway and everything goes crunch, and then, you know, you get upset, and suddenly if you step back real quick, you can see that you've changed your state radically. You've actually done almost a negative or inverse meditation. You've pushed yourself to a lower state, and it can be quite noticeable. If you've ever been in a very heightened state and you're sitting there and the incense is going and you've got the music just right and, you know, you're seeing colors, you're seeing auras, your third eye is wide open, and you're in this feeling, and then you snap out of it. Phone is always the big one, kids, dog, and you see such a difference between it from suddenly where you are now to where you just were. That I think shows you the difference in states that you can achieve. So I think it's a goal through practice to be continuously in that meditative state, to push yourself to always be in that heightened state and make that just a way of life. I think you see that more in more Eastern disciplines, more in India in that area, or Tibet. You'll see people who actually do that state continuously just as a frame of mind, and they stay in that state all the time. And that forces a different perspective if you're in that state. Certain things, when you're in that contemplative state, don't affect you as much or affect you more. So I think that's really where people should go towards, instead of meditation being a distinct separate thing, you set aside, you know, a half an hour at night or an hour at night and you meditate, that to instead try and be in that state all the time. And you can do it, little 2-minute, 3-minute exercises here or there to boost yourself up. And try and stay as in a heightened state as you can, comfortably stay in. I don't recommend it driving. I'm actually really good at it driving. Oof, all kinds of side effects there.
Yeah, you don't want to drive with them. That can be really scary sometimes. Just kidding. You know, I think that I probably find that place of stillness more than I realize. And that was something the meditation teacher, Christine, really helped me to see. And the fact that, oh, you know, I really was discovering these moments of stillness and connection without doing it in the way that, you know, like going to a class or I really was discovering that. And, you know, something that happened to me, too, is when I first awakened, I threw myself into it with such enthusiasm because I really was in need of assistance back then. I was in a spiritual crisis that I actually reached some very high states. But the problem was I wasn't ready for that. And it was impossible for me to integrate that into a regular life. And I think that happens to people, too. They call that, you know, a dramatic, I know I've heard it called like a kundalini awakening, where you open up really fast. And I think that ultimately that was a wonderful thing. But at the time, I wasn't ready for it. And I think that people need to take on spiritual experience at the rate they're ready. You know, you hear about people who just go on a vision quest or something. I didn't do that, although it almost felt like that. But they're just not ready. You don't know how fast you might open up, and you need someone to help you with grounding. And that's something I didn't know, is that how important it is that when you're having these higher states to find a guide. You really do need help sometimes with grounding, depending on how open you can be. So for me, I always want to be in a grounded state. It's hard for me to let go. You know, I guess that's an interesting question for you, Brian, that concept of letting go. I mean, it seems important for higher experience. And for me, you know, if I let go, I might get burned because I go too far, and I don't want to do that. You know, I've got things I need to focus on in life. I can't be off having a spiritual experience. And so how do you balance that? How in the heck do you manage to drive Not to say we want to teach that to the audience, but, you know, how can you find that balance of letting go and having a, and being still present enough to keep that going?
Well, you reminded me of something. I'll throw this in as an aside. There was a group I worked with years ago that taught astral projection, and it was very big, and they had techniques, tapes. Everybody was pushing on that, pushing to open their third eye because they wanted to get that third eye open, and they wanted to do this, and they wanted to do that. And I found something interesting, that they were all scared to death of doing this. Every one of them was just mind-boggling afraid of what they might encounter once they actually succeeded. And I had to chuckle because a lot of times if you astrally project, we're getting a little esoteric here for some people, where you project to, sometimes if you go to the higher states, can be very morphic. It can mold to what's on your mind. It's almost like a dream world. So if they're afraid, they have bad experiences because it morphs into what they're afraid of, because that's what's foremost in their mind. And the same way you're saying about letting go, some people are afraid to let go. They're shooting for a higher experience. And I see this, and I'll use some labels here. A lot of times in New Agers, you see people pushing to open certain chakras or to have certain experiences. Third eye being very common. People want to open that third eye because they want to see. And what happens is they, in order to open their third eye, their sixth chakra, they skip everything else. That's the only one they work on, and they get out of balance. So they have maybe poor grounding, and, you know, maybe the heart chakra is iffy, crown chakra is, you know, blocked, but they got that third eye, you know, wedged open pretty good, and they have a very skewed perspective. Think of it as trying to paint a picture, and you only have three colors. You don't have the full spectrum. So everything is in shades, or everything looks off a little bit. In my experience, to have the best experiences, you want to be in balance. Starts with a good grounding, however you need to be grounded. You know, I used to walk barefoot in the woods in the wintertime, and it didn't faze me. And that's how I stayed grounded. Sometimes, you know, soaking in the bathtub will help ground you. Bath salts, sea salts. Whatever works for you to help you have a good grounding, that really helps. Think of it as a pyramid. If you have an uneven base, it's going to be hard to build the pyramid up. And, you know, you work your chakras up and down. If that's the method you're using, if you have the rhythms or your kundalini, you work that up or down. There's any number of disciplines that will work on getting you in balance. You can do it through sound. You can do it through there's dozens of techniques you could use to get yourself a balance. If you're all well balanced, you're not going to fall over. If you're in good balance and the energy's flowing, then a sudden increase in energy isn't going to hurt. It's like Christmas tree lights. If you plug all your Christmas tree lights in from one end to the other, you know, if you pop one bulb, they all go out. But if you plug them in parallel and you have them different power cords and they have everything balanced, if you pop one bulb, you may not notice. So along those lines, if you get your meditations in balance, you get your bodies in balance, you get your energies in balance, you get your mind in balance, then when the universe responds to your request, it will give you what you're capable of handling. This begs the question, you know, will the universe give you more than you can handle? In my opinion, no. Will the experience be what you're after? Maybe not. Maybe you're after an experience you're not ready for. Maybe you're after an experience that you don't really want. You think you want it, but, you know, when you have it, maybe not. And then the experience you have, you know, what exactly did you experience? I have found, and I like to joke sometimes, I have dreams that don't translate. The dream is very distinctive, or the experience is very distinctive, and things are very definite in what they occurred, but I step back and look at it from a different perspective and realize that, well, yes, I dreamed about this, but it's so non sequitur as to be almost meaningless. then did I have a different experience, and as I bring it back into my consciousness, this is the closest thing I could come up with to translate it to. I've had numerous higher experiences that just don't translate. I mean, I look at what occurred, and I have this feeling of like, well, this is the closest approximation that my mind can wrap around it. I give it an example. If you have, to use the parlance, a five-dimensional experience, a 5D non-linear experience, how do you translate that back into a 3D organic brain so that you can recall it? Where you have these notions of things that don't exist in 3D because we don't have a census for it, how do you translate some of these? I think a lot of higher experiences are kind of like that. What we're really seeing is a translation, kind of like how you take a picture, compare it to 3D. You take the picture and you see this from one perspective, but in 3D you can walk around the object and see it from all perspectives. That ability to see all the perspectives is not there. So our experiences, a lot of times the higher experiences, are just an approximation. If we hold ourselves open to those experiences and understand that it may not translate, or there might be concepts that we don't fully understand, and that's okay. We just hold that concept as okay, here's this concept of being we. I sort of have an idea on it, and I think I might come to understand it, but if I hold it as a concept, it's a little easier to interpret the experience and say, well, this is what occurred. I have this concept here I'm still working on. So for the higher experiences, I encourage people to not over-interpret them, not try to get them down and put them on paper and say, this is exactly what occurred. Well, this is exactly what occurred from your current perspective. Be a little open to allowing your horizons to expand and not limiting them to what you think you experienced or what you think that occurred.
You know, you said something earlier about the universe not giving you more than you're prepared to handle. And, you know, sometimes I think back on how I did open up really fast, and it obviously I really wasn't ready. It didn't seem like I was ready for that. And yet, if I hadn't experienced such a direct flooding, so to speak, of the love of my Creator, I'm not sure I would have believed it. I mean, even after it happened, I'm not sure I believe, but a lot of things happened. I mean, I actually got concrete proof of things, which is really cool. I was in this higher state and started getting evidence of reincarnation. I mean, and we may talk about this on a future show, but things I just wasn't even looking for that just amazed me with photographic evidence and everything. In fact, I ended up, Brian and I ended up going to a reincarnation conference after that. So there was actually real information coming through. And I had another experience where I was, way too open. I really wasn't ready for it, but I was talking to a spirit guide. This was when I first awakened, an old woman. And there were things that were said that came true many years later. And to this day, it astonishes me. Things in my life that I couldn't possibly have predicted. And, you know, now I'm trying to remember more of that. In fact, some of us are trying to find these notes. A friend took some notes when I talked to this guide years ago and I was in this state. And, you know, there may have even been some information that has come true in the world, like the oil spill and things like that. And so not to say that it was some huge prophetic experience, but it was something meaningful to me. There were real things that came through. It wasn't just something I imagined. And it was very powerful, a very powerful connection. It just was too much. It was too much. I mean, I'm certainly not right now prepared to be in that state all the time. It just would be too much for me. But it wasn't ultimately too much, because if not for that experience, I wouldn't be here at all talking on this show. I wouldn't be on a spiritual path. It actually takes quite a bit of courage to do what I do. I come from a scientific background. In fact, that's something to mention about both Brian and myself. We both have quite an extensive scientific education. And Brian studied many different disciplines, and you know, and he's a Reiki master too. I mean, you combine the two. We have both found a way of combining science and spirituality. I have a, even though I have to admit I've forgotten a lot of it because it's a long time ago, I have an undergraduate degree in math and a master's in computer science. And, you know, I'm openly out of the closet now as a spiritual speaker and writer. And, you know, I'm sure some of my engineering friends, and I'm not in that world anymore, must wonder, you know. And what do you think about that, Brian? I mean, what about, you know, how do we integrate in this world? We're these spiritual beings. And, you know, I guess here's something else I wanted to mention about that, is there's kind of a double standard in society sometimes, is that, and this I have noticed, is that in parts of society, if you're a conservative Christian and you're an engineer or a scientist or whatever you are, it's a little bit easier, even in your professional life, to express that. Maybe not. I guess I have heard people say that's difficult, but it's just a little more culturally accepted than to say, you know, years ago I talked to a spirit guide. Yet, both concepts are equally spiritually valid. It's just different paths. And that's something I've kind of noticed in my journey. So anyway, why don't we reflect a little bit on authenticity, Brian? You know, as people in the scientific community, or who have certainly have scientific friends, you know, what about being authentically us as spiritual beings as well?
Ooh, that's a toughie for me, because I have a persona at work. Well, that's a challenge for me. I have a day job. I am a professional computer geek, and it actually works out pretty well because a lot of the troubleshooting I do is highly intuitive, which is the only way I can fix some of this stuff. It is a Microsoft product, and thus mostly broken, and Some of the times I come up with fixes, it's just statistically impossible that I decided to do this without any reference on a web page or anything. So I have to joke that in doing my you know, 9-to-5 3D job, I actually do it intuitively, which may be the only way some of these jobs can actually be done. And I am me at work. But there's also a facade I throw up of the, you know, computer geek job. And I let the facade drive sometimes. I find it's just easier. I get a lot of issues with people. I say things, and they're authentically me, and people either absolutely don't get it or I'm quickly misinterpreted. And I found it easier that I'm me when I need to be me. And I'm also have the facade. I want to say, well, alter ego. I don't know how to put it correctly. It's the me in the other state. Or if we were talking about higher and lower states, I have the lower state me, who deals with people who can't type and can't remember their password that they changed this morning. And I have the higher me who, while I'm helping this person, reset her password for the third time in 3 hours, listening to her go on and on about her husband who has terminal cancer, but I just happened to, by coincidence, be out there to listen to her talk about this for 3 hours. So I get a shifting of perspectives back and forth. Also, in my current position, I'm there by choice, and I have manifested certain things to occur that are, again, statistically almost impossible. And it's uproariously funny. But I actually got what I asked for numerous times at this job. And having gotten it, I realized it's not really what I wanted. That's kind of what I thought I wanted, sort of. But in hindsight now, no, it's not really what I wanted. But I still got what I asked for. So it's reinforcement that the divine is there to support us. So, you know, being your authentic self is fine. Being your authentic self by throwing it in people's faces? Not so much. Sometimes being authentic can scare people because it's so rare. or who you really are is uncomfortable to others. And making others uncomfortable doesn't help sometimes. So sometimes you can be your authentic self only as needed. That's sort of the idea that you can have great wisdom, but until somebody really needs it, it doesn't help to throw it out there. You can be a very good verbal healer who helps people with words, but until somebody actually needs it and it presents itself, you don't force it upon them. Sort of helping others when they ask for help, as opposed to deciding who needs help and forcing it upon them. You have to give other people their space, and you have to let other people walk their path too, while walking your path. And it's sort of being subtle versus being overt. I don't have a great use of euphemism here. It's getting late in the back of my head. But it's really allowing means to allow others to have their space while you're in your space. And thus you have to make room for all the spaces around you and not shove anybody out and not make anybody uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think probably it's almost for me like going back to junior high. I mean, as funny as that sounds, is that it's always, you know, for me, being authentic as this spiritual writer and speaker, when in the past I was a computer scientist, even though I still do websites, you know, just my own websites. But, I mean, I still dabble in it a little bit. But it's a continual journey for me to tell myself it doesn't matter, you know, that I know I have friends who, if they saw what I'm up to, because I'm getting, you know, I'm talking in Portland more, where we live in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, I've spoken at the Oregon Convention Center just very honestly about these topics. And I think to myself, you know, some of my friends may say, wow, look what happened to Susan. You know, she really went off the deep end. And that's really sad. Because, you know, I have no doubt that some people may think that, and yet they don't understand that spiritual aspect of life. And, you know, I give them the freedom to be who they are, and yet I sense that some people wouldn't give me the freedom to be who I am. And there's a lot of judgment in society right now. Only certain types of spiritual practice are considered okay, for example. You know, there may be a lot of things within Christianity that are odd if you were to just look at them from the outside, if you'd never heard of them before. Like the concept of communion would seem very odd, and any number of other things. And yet, people may look at New Age practices and view that as, you know, either crazy or off the deep end or just, you know, fuzzy woo-woo stuff that, you know, is not serious. And it's very serious. And even if some of it sounds unusual, like, you know, sometimes we play with cards. I mean, there's one. You know, when we talk about New Age, this show is about defining some New Age things, and we do some things that people would consider New Age. We don't do this all the time. We actually probably used to do it more in the past, but we've got a number of oracle cards that we use sometimes. Not a tarot deck, but, you know, not really into that so much as that's a little more defined, although I know some people are into that. But just, you know, I'm looking right now at some goddess cards that are sitting here. That would be viewed as, you know, just totally ridiculous. And I need to come to terms with that. And it's something that I do every day, is just say, I am going to be myself. This is working for me. This is my spiritual practice. It is a valid practice. And we need to raise the level of awareness about that there are not just established religions in the world, that, you know, the traditional established religions, there are many other practices. When I first awakened, a friend of mine who's actually been on the show, he's a shaman, took me to a medicine wheel, and that was an amazing experience, some of the things that I learned through that. And there are just so many non-traditional in the sense of what we sometimes think are the major religions in our culture. And, you know, we forget there are many other spiritual paths. You know, that one was based on a Native American tradition, which is every bit as much of a valid spiritual path that a lot of people follow as anything else. And so that's been something I need to work through. And I guess just talking through it, it gives me strength to say, hey, you know, I could have people listening to this show in the archive who are people I used to know. And I am being authentically myself, and I choose to step forward and do that.
Sorry, are we talking?
You were both in the chat a little bit. I know Brian's in the chat talking about tarot and cards. Once again, we still have some time left in the show. We'll keep this going as long as it makes sense. I appreciate people coming in and out of the chat. We do have a call-in number if anyone's listening who might like to call in. No pressure on that, just putting it out there. 310-807-5104. As this show develops, you know, we may, I can see us doing this again. Brian and I think it's been a really good experience, and I would love to see it where we could take call-in questions and, you know, people who may want to talk about any issues they're having, and, you know, we can talk about that together in a relaxed way. And tonight, this is just really the first show of this particular format, and but we're open to all kinds of ideas as to where to take this. As spiritual people, you know, we never know sometimes where we're guided next. We just want to be of the most assistance to others that we can be. And in doing so, you know, we help ourselves too. This is cathartic for me to talk openly. And so it's helpful for all of us. All right, I'm going to ask, since Brian is busily typing, I think I'm going to ask him a question just to get him talking about something here. The law of attraction. There is a classic concept that's very prevalent in New Age circles. Brian and I, if there's anything we argue about, if we argue, I mean, in a friendly way, it's the law of attraction in terms of spiritual things, because I have an issue with negative intent. I don't believe that negative intent is as powerful as positive intent. And, you know, since I come from a long line of warriors, I haven't seen that manifest itself in their worst nightmares, nor in my worst nightmares, thankfully, because I can be fearful sometimes. And I feel like, you know, especially if you have been a person who's fallen into fear, it's not that it doesn't hold you back to some degree. I just don't feel that the fear has quite as much power as some people give it, that you can just make it happen, that your worst nightmares are just going to appear. And, Brian, why don't you talk about that a little bit, as to how do you view manifestation in the world, and is it buffered? Is there a buffer? For me, there has to be this buffer of love that protects us from our worst nightmares. And I just haven't seen the evidence of our worst fears happening. And I know you talk some about focus and that you really have to focus on it. But anyway, I'll let you reflect on this, since I know this is a topic we've talked about a lot.
The law of attraction. Well, in my experience, you can focus on a positive intent or you can focus on a negative intent. And focusing on a positive intent is, in my opinion, stronger than focusing on a negative intent. So along those lines, you can focus on a child feeling better. You can focus on finding a job. You can focus on yourself feeling better, or just a positive outcome. And that's a, it's a fairly straightforward, fairly positive form of energy you can put out there. To focus on a negative outcome is much more difficult. First of all, you're adverse to that negative outcome. So to focus on it and hold it requires an amazing amount of discipline. And if you have that much discipline, why are you focusing on a negative outcome? Now, that's not to say you can't manifest negative outcomes. I have done so before. I have done so intentionally. In curious hindsight, when I look back at it now, I realize I've done it numerous times. I've done it recently. I have come down with illnesses and come down with affliction because I don't feel like going into work. So suddenly I threw my back out, or I developed a knee problem out of the blue and was literally on crutches for a week. And then it went away. And it's like, well, why did that occur? Well, because I didn't really want to go to work for that week. So I developed a knee problem. I don't really get time off anymore in my current job. I get flex time. So to take a day off sometimes is exceedingly difficult. If I just don't feel like going in. So I develop conditions. Now, we all, well, not all of us, but some of us have children, and we've seen this occur before where, you know, it's Friday, I don't want to go, I'm sick, I don't want to go to work. So when I go to school, they develop a fever. Is this an example of the law of attraction? Is this an example of a negative outcome? Well, is it a negative outcome or not? My knees was really bothering me. It was sore. I couldn't walk on it. Was that a negative outcome? Well, I got what I wanted, though. I didn't want to go to work for a couple of days. I wanted a couple of days off. I wanted to stay home and sleep in and play on the computer. And I got that. So was that a positive outcome or a negative outcome? And what intent was I holding in my head? And was I really conscious of it at the time, or did I just allow it to occur? The negative outcomes, truly negative outcomes, and the law of attraction, I think are really difficult to pull off. You can have an outcome, and you can point to it and say, well, that's negative, but is it something you really wanted? And I think you can do this. I think you can cause illness, cause yourself to be sick because you want to. I've done it. I think you can cause any number of things to occur. And positive and negative, I don't think apply. I think it's a subjective thing. I think, is that something you really wanted to occur? And along the same lines, to make it go away, it can happen just as quickly. A truly positive intent, and I don't mean trying to win the lottery or indirect things like that. I think it works best with direct things. I need a job. Oh, there's a perfect example. If we go way back when I was kind of in my hibernation phase, I didn't like my job, and I wanted more money is what I wanted. So I sat down with some serious intent and some serious ritual, and I said, I want more money. And 2 weeks later, I lost my job. And I spent the whole summer off on unemployment with my kids, and then I got a new job that paid better. And, you know, I went 2 years at that job. I didn't like that job. I did the same thing again, the same ritual, the same intent. Lost my job again, spent the whole summer off with grumping about being unemployed. Only in hindsight do I realize that I got the whole summer off on unemployment with my kids. What was I complaining about? The job I got after that paid more money. I got exactly what I asked for. I wasn't happy with the job because that's not what I asked for. I asked for more money. I asked for a job for more money. That's what I got. I wasn't happy with it. What I really wanted was a job I was happy in. Well, I did finally get one, and it was great. But at some point, I needed to move on, and so things occurred to allow me to move on and eventually get where I needed to go. So I think the law of attraction does work, but I think people get really tied into what's a positive and what's a negative aspect of the law of attraction. And I think people don't come clean with themselves on what they really want. You know, people say, oh, I want to win the lottery. Well, what do you really want? Well, what I really want is a nice place by the ocean with this, this, and this. Well, why don't you set the intent for that? You're setting the intent for winning the lottery, which may cause all kinds of side effects, which may mean you'd never actually get what you really wanted. I found the universe will often give you what you ask for, even if you didn't really want it in the first place. So sometimes you need to ask the universe, what is it I really want? Or what is it I really need? A whole separate concept. See what you get then. And I think people will be a lot happier, and I think that some of the issues people seem to have with how things manifest will go away once they understand what it is they're actually trying to manifest.
Well, you know, I know that we've talked before about how difficult it is to manifest something negative, as you say. I think people, that's a thing about fear. I think a lot of people fear the negative law of attraction. I also think there's a lot of blame that goes around. We had a talk, there was another show we did on this, not with you, Brian, but I was with someone else talking about this. And it's like people play this blame game in a negative way, that if something bad is happening to someone, like they get cancer, you know, it's your fault in some way or another. You know, if you're a Christian, in fact, the person I was talking with that week was the person who leads the group Portland Christians with Questions. A Christian might say that you're not praying hard enough. You know, you're not praying hard enough. You know, in this case, she used to be a charismatic Christian. You know, there are certain things that you need to do that you're not doing, or maybe your life isn't reflecting your faith enough, and that's why you're suffering. I sat in one of the seminars. In fact, you were at this one, Brian, where someone was in a group. We occasionally will hold live group sessions at spiritual seminars. And, you know, somebody talked about how leaving her husband, you know, and then things weren't going well after that financially, well, that was blamed on her for not doing the right thing, even though this was an abusive relationship, that this person had been discouraged to leave. And, you know, with the law of attraction, I see a lot of, sometimes people treat it in a positive way, but a lot of times there can be a lot of almost accusatory statements going around that can feel very hurtful to people. I mean, someone close to me had cancer some time ago and can't think of any reason why that was manifested. Really quite a positive person. And I think, you know, I even blogged about this recently, that what if sometimes things happen in our life that initially may seem adverse, and yet they actually lead to greater things? In fact, the person I'm thinking of, about who's close to me who had cancer, went on to help a lot of people, and that experience ended up being a huge growth experience, and they got through it. And it wasn't probably something that they would have chosen, but in the end, it was a positive. And when I think about some of the things I've been through in my life, some difficult experiences, I too see them that way now in retrospect. Without those experiences, even though they were very difficult at the time, I certainly wouldn't be here talking about these spiritual things. Uh-oh. I want to make sure we have sound. Someone's saying they don't have sound in the chat. So, well, looks like we're still up. Talk about negative things. Brian, why don't you say something so I can see if you're still coming through.
Well, you're talking about cancer. My father died of cancer. And yeah. He died, let's see, 6 years ago? I have to think now. 6 years ago. He died, he was diagnosed with cancer right after my spiritual reemergence. And at the time, I had certain views. I'm like, well, I know some healers. We'll get them all fired up. We'll get him cured, yada, yada, yada. And it didn't work. And I only came to realize after he transitioned and we had some discussions that when he chose to leave, he chose, and in my opinion, when we transitioned, we know when we're going. How we go is always for those we leave behind, whether we can help somebody by how we go. And think about that sometimes when you see unusual deaths occur. And so he had 6 months to get things in order. And I look at why he chose to go for cancer, and part, a lot of it had to do with me. I was actually what was holding him back. And there were some lessons that I learned from the way he chose to leave and the reason he had cancer that profoundly affected me and helped me move through some things that I may still be stuck in if he hadn't chose to exit that way. So, he's here with me right now. My ears are ringing. Look at it from that perspective sometimes, why things occur to people or why people transition the way they do or why things happen the way they do. Does it give them an opportunity to teach others or to teach themselves something that would not happen any other way? Knowing that you're going to die is an interesting perspective, as opposed to just, you know, random car accident. Oh, there's no time there to set things right. Knowing that you're going to transition in, you know, 5, 6, 7 months gives you a chance to set everything, fix everything that you've left undone, get everything set up, and get everything taken care of. How many people actually take advantage of that? How many people fight it? That's a whole separate show, sometime to deal with that, transitions. But I really think a lot of things that occur are opportunities for growth. And if you step back and something really large, I don't want to say tragic, something profoundly deep occurs in your life, look at it as an opportunity for change or an opportunity for growth, and see if you working through this can push you further down your path and get you where you need to be.
Okay. I'm listening to you, Brian. I'm just checking some technical things. Are you there?
Still here. That can happen. Okay. Sometimes the stream just dies and you got to reconnect to get it back.
Well, it's not showing that. Seems to be okay. Yeah. I can't really tell. It's hard for us to tell if it's working. I guess we'll find out. We still have a couple people in the chat, but I know they can't interact with us because they're guests. So, Nurse Healer, who's in the chat, just if you can, stay around for a few minutes and we'll see if it comes back. I think I might have just been thrown out of the chat because I tried to. The chat's going to maybe go down. Great. Oh well, see, you talk about the negative law of attraction and what happens. But because I tried to reinitiate something, so it may, we'll see what happens here. I don't usually do that right during the midst of the chat. Can you still see the chat, Brian?
Yeah, the chat's still up. You just dropped out.
Okay, all right, good. Well, at least you can see it. I can't see it right now, so, but that's all right. Okay. Anyway, I'm going to have you talk for a few more minutes. Pick a new age topic, Brian. And I'm going to see if I can get back in the chat.
Gee, pick a new age topic. Discuss among yourselves. Oh, gee. I'm not so good. I'm picking up random topics. I tend to
just pick a book off the shelf and start talking. You can talk about The Journey Home, that book, and what it means to you.
The Journey Home by Lee Carroll. Oh, well, I'm looking at a large bookshelf of very mixed books, and this is a good topic. Most people on their spiritual path will find the book. And it's all a separate discussion called Children of the Book, where you find the book and you hold it up and you say, here is the book that has the answer. And you'll see that in spiritual pursuits. You'll see that in religious pursuits. And I think it's very common where you will be at a certain point in your life, a certain point in your path, and you find a book written by somebody at like mind at the moment, and you read through it and you're like, yes, this is it. This is great. This describes what I've gone through, describes what I'm going through. And you hold up the book and you say, this is the book, this is it. And you recommend it to your friends and they're like, I don't like that one. Or somebody else reads it and says, it's okay. And, you know, it's comforting because it describes what you've gone through, what you've been through, what you're going through. And I found a lot of people, when they have the book, they're happy. And then they hang on to it and they say, this is the book. And all the other books don't matter because this is the book. And in my life, I've had probably 20 of those, the books. And I have to chuckle sometimes because some of them I actually don't like at all now. But at the time, it let me move forward, you know, from point A to point C. This book got me a little further down the road. And it helped me, parts of it were useful at the time and helped me move forward. And I've discovered that a lot of times books can help you move a little bit. Books can confirm things. And it's great. But hanging on to a book too long can, I don't want to say hold you back, but limit where you can go by holding on to a book or holding on to a belief. One of my favorite axioms is the only constant is change. So if we are changing a lot, and in my experience over the last few years, we've been changing exponentially, things just are different. And a lot of things that used to work don't, and a lot of things that didn't work do. So a lot of older books which discuss certain things either aren't relevant anymore or the concepts worked at the time but are not as effective now. So one of the things to ponder about when we have our great collection of books and a lot of quote-unquote New Agers tend to collect books by the box load is, do we need to hang on to them? Do we need to pass them on? Think of them as textbooks. You know, you have this great book in third grade, and it was wonderful. It did a lot of what you needed to do. And, you know, it really helped you. And in fourth grade, you still have the book. In fifth grade, you still have the book, and it's working okay. In sixth grade, that third grade book is kind of not as useful. And by the time you get to, you know, ninth grade, tenth grade, the book is really not helping. And it just gets put on the shelf and dusty. A lot of the books in our path, a lot of the material in our path can be treated that way. It's not wrong. It's not bad. It's just dated or for a certain period in our lives. So I encourage people to not grip too strongly to their books and some of their concepts, some of their practices. And to not be afraid to try new things on for size, to try new books, to try new practices, see what fits. Think of it kind of like clothes. You know, sometimes the summer jeans don't fit in the winter jeans don't fit in the summer. The same thing. Let's see if we have that. Do we have the audio worked out here? Let's see everybody.
Yes, it's working. It's working. I just checked and it's fine. And everyone can hear it now. You're not talking to nobody.
I'm just not talking to myself. So I encourage people to not grip too tightly to the things they know. A lot of things I knew don't seem to be working as well anymore, and some of the things that never really seemed to work too well are working great now. So, you know, try that door that never seemed to open because it was locked. It may be unlocked now. Nobody's tried it.
You know, when you talk about these books that have been meaningful to you at different levels, I was looking at the audio for a second, so I wasn't able to hear everything you said, but I got the gist of much of it. Some books speak to some people and some books don't at all. I mean, I know there are books that are very meaningful to you that, to me, they just didn't really work for me. And, you know, that's going to be hard sometimes because you so much, you know, when you have a close friend or your significant other, like Brian is with me, you want to share this book, but you know what? Maybe it only speaks to me in a certain way because of my journey. and it may not speak in the same way to you. And same thing with books that really reach you. And, you know, for me, you know, may not really work the same way. And that can go with speakers, just about anything, teachers. I will say that on my path, maybe because I did follow the evangelical path for such a part of my life and it was difficult for me, I'm very, very discerning in the sense of I really don't belong to any group or, you know, I don't look for a book that has to be 100% true anymore. Whereas I know that that can be a common pitfall where people go from one book to another. You know, that can often happen to people coming out of the evangelical church where they could, maybe the Bible didn't work for them, so, or they either find some interpretation of the Bible that works. ASIM is a good example where they've come up with a different interpretation of the Bible, and yet it's still having this book. I know you've called it, Brian, the people of the book, where you need a book, you need a teacher, you need a guru, you need something to give you all the answers. And what if the real situation is that there is nothing that's going to give you all the answers like that except for connecting, that it's not going to be in one book and that you have to be discerning in everything you read?
Well, I talked earlier about, do the answers really matter or is it how you got them? And this is really what I'm talking about. If you know, you could get three of your greatest spiritual questions answered, would you stop seeking? Or would you just keep on seeking? I have discovered when I work with people, the answers really don't matter. And they have trouble with that. I'm like, well, of course they matter. And I said, well, do the answers matter or how you got them? You know, if you take a four-year-old who's trying to build something with blocks and you build it for them, they get upset because they want to do it on their own. The same way with people. If there's something that they want to achieve, then you have to let them achieve it their way. Sometimes the answer isn't what they want. Maybe some guidance, like, well, look in that direction or look in this direction or have you thought of this? Little hints, little tips, little clues to help them get going in the right direction. And the answers themselves might be more of a confirmation or more of a milestone that, oh, okay, there's the answer. Yep, that's what I got. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Like doing homework problems with the odd answers in the back of the book being there. It just lets you know that you're doing it right. So the answers aren't always what they're really seeking. And I think sometimes people get lost on that they think the answer is actually what they're after. Here's the question. All I got to do is find the answer, and then I'll be right. And then they find the answer, and it's not the enlightenment they were looking for. It's not. They still have the same feeling. They're still seeking, and they're like, well, wait a minute. I've got the answer right here. Why am I not enlightened? Why am I not content? Why am I not satisfied? Why am I still restless? Why am I still searching? And at some point, they'll finally get to the stage where they realize that the whole process is about the journey. It's like taking a vacation. You know, you can go down the interstate at 70 miles an hour and get to where you're going, and ta-da, you've gotten there. Or you can take the scenic route, and the movie Cars is coming up in my head. You can take the interstate, or you can take Route 66 and take the scenic route. Take a nice leisurely drive. And see the things that other people miss. See all the things around you. You know, I'm of the opinion it's really about the journey. It's about how you got there and not so much the destination. You know, when we talk about life as a journey, we all know where we're going. Well, let me rephrase that. We all know how it ends. Not everybody knows where they're going. But we all know how it ends. So if you know the ending, just like the ending of a movie. If you know the ending, is the movie worth watching? Yes, because you don't know how you're going to get to that end. But you know that it is going to end. So enjoy the ride while you're on it. And really, that's what life's all about.
You know, I think about that question I asked years ago. Show me the way. Show me the way. And, you know, the interesting thing is that although that was a very important question to me at the time, the way isn't necessarily something that I absolutely need to know. I mean, everything about the way. I mean, if anything, I think what you've said and certainly what my journey reflects, there are many ways. And as, if anything, the way is exploring many ways and finding what works and growing. And sometimes there are challenges and working through that. So I know we're starting to wind down here. And I think this has been a good experiment. I think I'll have to ask Brian's concurrence if he'd like to come back and do this again. I don't know how regular of a schedule, but I think something I'd like, I know that a lot of people listen to this show in the archives, and since we are considering doing this again, I mean, I should probably ask Brian, are we considering doing this again, Brian?
Well, I have one stipulation. It has to be the Susan and Brian show and not the Brian and Susan show, because that would just be BS. So, sure.
We'll have to make it a special version of the Frontier Beyond Fear show, because I still have some guests coming up that will probably be during the day, but I sense this show needs to be at night and that Saturday night is a really good time to run it. And we'll see how regular we're going to do it. I mean, keep an eye on the schedule. If you're listening in the archive, what I wanted to say is that in the future, to make this the most effective, if anyone would like to bring questions or issues, journeys from their lives to the show, I'd like to turn this into a more interactive format over time as we develop it. And we've had some good interaction in the chat room today, and that's been awesome. And I really appreciated the people who've been in there interacting with us. And I think, and I appreciate the affirmations coming from the chat room right now. Thank you. I'd say, we're on a journey with this show too. And let's see where it goes. Because I think, you know, we're here to help each other. We're here to be honestly, authentically ourselves. And if we can encourage others to come in here and talk about their journeys and we can interact and see different perspectives on things, I think that could be of real value. So I appreciate you being here tonight, Brian. We've been meaning to do this for quite some time, and it finally manifested. And the show itself, next week, we'll see what happens. Keep an eye on the schedule because I may just run another Saturday night show. We do have other shows that run on Fridays during the day where I may bring in guests, or we may go to a Saturday format. I'm not sure. We'll just see what we're guided to do with this. But keep an eye on the schedule. There is a Facebook page for the Frontier Beyond Fear. You can search for that. People coming in here are welcome to friend us on Facebook. I'm a little more active on Facebook than Brian is, you can certainly keep track of things there or on this page as well. So thank you, everyone, and thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Susan, for having me.
Well, of course.